No doubt about it. Mission Valley is far cheaper, it's quicker, and it's easier for many reasons.
Chargers have made it clear that they were open to both options. And I think that when you look at Mission Valley, that is the best option for success. That gives us our best opportunity to get across the finish line sooner, because you've seen what's happening up in Los Angeles.
The big issue is, can you finance a stadium in a way that's acceptable to the public? And we always have thought, at least in recent years, that the best option for doing that is downtown. Now, the task force apparently feels differently, and we will see what they come up with. There's something wrong
with this guy. Well, the voice we heard there, Adam Day, chairman of CSAG. You heard Mayor Faulkner. You heard Mark Fabiani. Chargers wanted downtown. But they've said all along that, hey, they just want a new site and a stadium, and they don't want just political fodder, as Mark Fabiani has said. We're joined in studio by the mighty 1090's Jay Paris, and of course, a longtime sports writer in this community who's been around the Charger organization for, I would say, at least 25 years. Is that a good estimate?
1992, Boss Ross and I came in, same year.
Okay, well, yeah, and you and Boss Ross had a great relationship.
Yeah, those were back in the good old days.
You guys used to go run laps around UCSD after the morning workout.
Yes, we did. We never had to worry about him stepping on his britches because he wore his pants up by his ankles. Remember those ankles flood fighters he always wore?
Oh, okay, that was great. Yeah, he'd meet with Bernie Wilson and Mick McGrain in those days. I think T.J. Simers was still down
Simers,
here.
Simers, Clark Judge. I mean, it was there were seven newspapers when I came. There's one now.
Yeah, one, and you would go run with Coach Ross. That was a little bit different back in those days.
And commute with Bobby Bethard.
That's right.
That's right.
A lot different nowadays, yeah. Covering a ball club. Yeah. Hey, what did you think about the announcement yesterday?
You know, I think CSAG did what it was asked to do by the mayor, and they gave it their supreme effort. And I thought it was a good first step. What struck me, Coach, that there were not one Charger representative there. And the optic was here's a plan that maybe we're not going to sell real hard. I mean, the Charger headquarters are 3 miles away from where that press conference was yesterday. And it just would have – if this thing's going to get done, it's going to take a unifying effort. And yesterday it was one note show of shy of a full song, that's for sure.
I wonder if anyone from the Citizen Stadium Advisory Group called the Chargers. I mean, obviously they knew about it the day before, but right. I wonder if they felt like they needed to be invited to that.
Boy, I don't know, but you had the former players there, you had Boltman there, you had CSAG there, and all under the great statue of the great Jack Murphy. So it's going to be interesting to see where this goes, because let's be clear, the Chargers have said they're open to either site. They definitely wanted the downtown the venue. That's just an easier sell. You got to be careful here now. You put a stadium out there in Mission Valley, and it looks like a trophy for a rich guy. You put something downtown, and maybe you can sell it a little easier, as it's something for the city, the county, for the whole everybody out here. So they got some work to do. Now, they did step one. Step two is going to be a little more heavy lifting.
Well, there's no question about that. And, again, we're expecting that to come somewhere between, like, May 18th, May 20th.
Right.
I would think that the way this group has been going about their business, they would probably get it to the mayor maybe a little bit earlier.
Yeah, I think so. And again, tip of the hat to those guys. I mean, Jim Steig and all of them, really, I mean, they're writing checks out of their own checkbook to have fan forums and to do these different things. But, Mark Fabiani was real clear that they weren't going to get sign off on a half-baked idea. And part of that half-baked idea was them trying to get around this two-third vote. And that's what happened in the convention center expansion that was, struck down by the courts. And I think Fabiani and the Chargers' fear is that the financial mechanism will be so complicated or so confusing that it's going to take a lot of years to get through the lawsuits. Put it on the vote, and if they vote for it, it's a slam dunk. But if you try to get around that, you're just opening yourself up for litigation.
Well, it's going to be interesting, because they've talked about the revitalization down at Mission Valley, but
right.
we haven't seen a schematic on that. It was like the other day, the UT had that beautiful rendering of a proposed downtown stadium and looked great.
Right.
And it got really, I think it started to get some people to kind of turn their heads maybe away from the Mission Valley site to downtown. I'm kind of anxious to see whenever they come up with a rendering of what's going to be in and around around the stadium.
Yeah, Spanos Sports Village or whatever they're going to call it out there. It's like the renderings for the ones in Carson. They don't show the oil refineries flickering across the street there. So be careful of those renderings.
Jay Paris joining me in studio today here on the Mighty 1090. We'll get back to more phone calls coming up here in a little while. Jay, your thoughts overall about the way things have gone, and do you think even with the Qualcomm site there will be litigation?
Oh, absolutely. Mission Valley, Friars Road, I mean, you can walk it faster than you can drive it. And, you know, way back when this was first floated, when the Chargers wanted to do it, I mean, there wasn't the development that there is now. And it's a pretty congested artery getting through there. And I'm just wondering, with more people there, with more condos there, with more residents there, when's the NIMBY flag going to start flying? You know, not in my backyard. I mean, those people know where the mitigating circumstances on a game day and what that's going to mean. And, you know, it's not going to be a rubber stamp process by any means.
What do you think it would be if they would have chose downtown?
I appreciate and I understand the obstacles there, although somebody's still going to have to explain to me why it takes 7 years to move a bus yard.
You know, talking, they've said $150 million.
Right. You know, that's a heck, plop them at Qualcomm Stadium. You got the room and in the trolley, there's your bus yard right there. So I just think it would have been an easier sell to people not Charger fans. You know, we preach the choir in here every day. There's a lot of people out there that don't like the Chargers or don't like sports or just rather go to the opera, which is fine too. So really, with that project downtown, you could maybe sell it more than a sports facility for a billionaire, let's be frank here. And with the one in Mission Valley with no retractable roof or soft tarp or whatever you're going to do, you're limited in the dates you can fill that with. And I know, you know, I've never heard monster truck jams get so much publicity when people are trying to build a stadium. That's fine, but there's another stadium that's going to be competing for that stuff, Petco Park as well. So I think it's a first step, but there's many steps left in this journey.
Because you've got so many contacts around the National Football League, right. I mean, you're not just a typical guy that, you know, covers the NFL. You did it for a long time. You're very well thought of in the NFL among the NFL writers. And you talk to people in St. Louis. You talk to people in Oakland. I mean, give me your take on Stan Kroenke and Inglewood, because it sounds like they're looking to start putting a shovel in the dirt in December.
Yeah, I think of Stan. I think of two things, deep pockets and Walmart, you know, and he's got his $5 billion, and he married one of the Walmart gals, and she's got her $5 billion. And I guarantee you, they don't shop at Walmart with $10 billion. So that's why Stan, you take him seriously, because he has the money, and more importantly, he has the team, and he's got a plot of land. And while they might say you need so many votes and all that, I don't think that'll stand up in court, and certainly Stan won't be intimidated by trying to move out here.
Well, the Rams, I mean, St. Louis in general, they're trying to do everything they can to keep the Rams.
And to show you the power of how if governments are eager to give away money, he put out a press release about Inglewood. By the end of the week, he had $400 to $600 million in funds maybe going his way. I mean, he put out a press release. He didn't put a shovel in the dirt. So I think he's coming out here, and I think he's coming fast, and it's really accelerated everything around here. Oakland, that's been a disaster up there since they moved back there. And I know Carson could be a bluff, but I'm not so sure. I know the Chargers would be the third guy in the fight, if you will, up there, but that's a big old market, and the NFL is good at marketing. So.
Well, here's the interesting topic on that. If Kroenke does start to build that stadium in December,
right.
Okay, the Raiders, their lease is going to be up in January of 2016. Get them through next year. And if they got to the playoffs, that's why it was through January, okay? that's probably not going to happen. But anyways, they start building that stadium in Inglewood in December. I can't imagine Carson building a stadium.
Yeah, but you got one or two stands. He doesn't need a co-tenant. I mean, he can run that baby and build a palace much like the 49ers did.
Yeah, but
I mean,
you're not going to have three teams in L.A.
No, you're probably not going to do that. But I'll see where Oakland ends up. But let's see if they make it down here or not.
They don't have the money to do it on their own, from what we understand.
And neither do the Chargers. That's why they're in partnership. And I think what's telling is, you know, Goldman Sachs has been getting as much recognition as Tom Brady these last couple of weeks, because they're fronting all these things. I keep waiting for that investor to come down here and say, hey, we'll front you that money. We'll do that. You know, why is it everywhere else it's being done without taxpayer support except in San Diego?
Well, maybe somebody from the city of San Diego needs to go out and recruit someone like that.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of Qualcomm buildings right around our building. It'd be nice to have a owner with deep pockets and could pull it off himself. But I don't blame the Spanoses or the NFL for ever asking. That's business, you know. But I would just would hope that the next time the city gets a little more lawyered up, because going back to the ticket guarantee, going back to this escape clause the Chargers have, that negotiating table has been pretty one-sided.
You've known Mark Fabiani for a long period of time, and I think, you know, away from the mic, away from the press, just shooting the bull, Fabiani's a good guy.
Yep.
And I think he is a good guy, but he's a lawyer. He's very well thought of by people that he works for. That's why he continues to get some of these big-time jobs around the entire country. I think in a lot of ways, even though he's irritated a lot of people and even guys that know him kind of shake their head, what's he doing? He really got a lot of people off their rear end down here in San Diego.
Yeah, he did. And something had to do, you know, 13, 14 years, it was a glacier-like movement. Stan Kroenke, he fired the first blow now. That really got people's attention. And then with the Carson announcement, everybody perked up on that one. But, you know, let's be clear here. Those strings of Mark are being pulled by the Spanos family. He never says anything that they don't want to be said. And if I could circle back real quickly as well, you know, Dean Spanos has been Casper the Ghost in this. And at some point, you need the leader of the organization to come out and make a statement or say he appreciates the effort going into it. It just seems there's a big disconnect between the fans and the ownership of really of what's one of the jewels of San Diego, the San Diego Chargers.
Well, if they come up with a viable financial plan and they decide to build it at the Qualcomm site, then they'll probably show up at a press conference arm in arm and hugging one another.
Singing away. I'd like to see that. It's just curious. I think, too, it's just the contrast of how the Padres did it with Larry Lucchino and Morse to some effect. I mean, they were out in the community doing those.
Well, they also went to the World Series, too.
That's probably our next segment. But, you know, the free agency of the Chargers, I know they've made a couple, you know, signings. But, my goodness, if you wanted to push all the chips on the table and get some excitement in this community, maybe go overpay for somebody that you wouldn't otherwise, because they got some holes in that thing. And if you're going to call Mike McCoy, Mike McThird after two third-place finishes, that's on you.
We're going to take a timeout. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the Chargers and what they have not got done in free agency. We'll take a look at some of the other free agent moves this week, and we'll talk a little bit about our San Diego Padres. Coach John Quintero in studio here for the full half hour. Jay Paris, this is San Diego sports leader, the Mighty 1090.
Aztecs basketball on the Mighty 1090.
Slam dunk by Malik. How did he do that?
The Aztecs roll on in the Mountain West Conference Tournament against the Colorado State Rams. Tonight's at 8.
JJ headed everybody off the glass. Got it, and he was fouled. Big time sequence.
On the home of the Aztecs.
That's Aztec basketball right there.
San Diego's sports leader, the Mighty 1090.
Mighty 1090 time is 4:20. Coming up bottom of the hour, we're going to visit with Elliot Harrison, NFL Network analyst. Look forward to him. And at 5 o'clock, Scott Miller, National Baseball Writer, Bleacher Report, going to stop on by. We have a trade in the National Football League. The Miami Dolphins have traded Mike Wallace to the Minnesota Vikings for a fifth-round pick. And Jay Paris joining us this half hour in studio. What do you think about that deal, Mr. Paris?
That is one fast Ole Miss guy running down the field, I'll tell you that. Didn't quite work out like they thought in Miami. What surprises me is the amount of trades this offseason. You know, the NFL always used to play second fiddle to the hot stove league and baseball. But it's showing the aggressiveness of general managers. And I think maybe the A.J. Prella factor has leaked over to another sport. I just keep waiting for something to happen from the Chargers. And I know they got Flowers in Orlando, Franklin, and Jacoby Jones, which was a great, you know, good signing. And you got King Dunlap back. But, you know, Phillip Rivers is going to be 34 now when the playoffs start. So will Antonio Gates be 35. Weddle's, you know, past 30. Floyd will be 34. I mean, let's go. You know, it's fun to say we can build through the draft and all that, but when your core star players reach a certain age, you got to go for it. this is this year, and why not go for it this year when you're trying to drum up support in the community for a new stadium?
How much pressure do you think McCoy goes into the third season with?
He's definitely, you know, pressure is that, you know, Spanos has never wanted to pay a coach who's not around. So I'm not saying he's going to be fired or anything, but, you know, 9-7 is 9-7. And you got to take care of business in your front yard and your backyard, and they didn't do that last year. You lose 4 out of 6 in your division, you only do too much. And thank God for the Raiders, that's where those 2 wins came from. So if you're not winning in your division, that's where you got to start. And they got some work to do in two third-place finishes. I know they got that playoff win, but, you know, they've had 2 playoff wins since 2008. They've missed the playoffs 4 out of the last 5 years. So when people say, well, you can't sell PSLs down here, yeah, no kidding, because the product hasn't been worthy of maybe somebody wanting to put out some PSL money. So maybe that changes. But I was just hoping with all these wide receivers from Kenny Stills to Mike Wallace to all these guys changing teams and really changing the vibe in a clubhouse, still waiting for a big splash from the Chargers.
You know, I really don't know what their philosophy is on these wide receivers. I mean, right now, you know, Malcolm
Floyd's
had a great
Royal,
career. And Eddie Royal, you know, was really a security blanket the last couple of years.
Especially when Woodhead went down last year.
Yeah, he went down, and Eddie did a great job, no question about it, especially early in the year. He had some dynamic games.
Right.
They need a guy that can get downfield, and I don't know if Malcolm Floyd can do that on a regular basis any longer.
Yeah, and Keenan's more of a possession guy, and he can play that slot, but, you know, if Floyd can do it, I mean, what's, you know, they can load up to make sure he doesn't do it. And, you know, Jones, I know he's definitely he's there for the return kicks and punts. You know, he's going to catch more than a handful of passes.
I mean, another guy that did good, but they didn't suit him up till late in the year, was that kid they got out of the Canadian Football League, Dontrell Inman, but he's more of an underneath receiver as well.
Yeah, there's really not that speed burner. I mean, Jones can certainly do it, but it's tough to get him to do it on routes.
Okay, the offensive line is starting to shape up. You sign Orlando Franklin, you got Fluker, you got Chris Watt coming back, he'll be healthy, you got re-signed King Dunlap. I think Watt factors, for me at least, at left guard rather than at center. So I think they, in my opinion, they need a center, but they also need some depth.
Yeah, they need some depth, and boy, they learned that last year going through 5 starting centers. And Watt was a guard at Notre Dame, and he seemed, you know, a little undersized there to be center. I mean, Nick Hardwick certainly got pad under pad for a lot of years being undersized. But, you know, I hear what you're saying there, but there's a few ifs in there now. You know, right guard, is Johnny Troutman going to be your guy if you leave Fluker out on the tackle? And Watt still has to, you know, earn his stripes. So, you know, he did okay while he was in there, but he's still a rookie in my book.
See, I'd factor in Watt at left guard.
Right.
I'd put the 2 big boys over on that right side. I mean, I'd load up on that right side with a Fluker. Whether they keep him at tackle or move him in, I think they probably ought to move him in. I think he could be more dynamic there long term and probably play a little bit longer, because eventually he's going to have to move into guard. You might as well make that decision right now. And Franklin's played a lot of tackle. To me, that seems to be the obvious choice for me.
Yeah, and it'd be nice to have a bigger guy there if you're going to help Watt out at center, too, and a massive guy that Fluker is. So, you know, it's coming together, and they said, I hear what they're saying. I mean, they signed a cornerback and a left tackle. They're hardly 2 more important positions on a team, and the Chargers took care of that right off the bat.
I mean, I don't know how many holes they're going to have to fill during the draft. I mean, let's face it, they got to get a running back. They got to get a dynamite running back, an every down type running back. They've got the guys that can be the third down backs. In fact, they got 2 of them, Donald Brown and Danny Woodhead coming back from an injury. Brandon Oliver did a nice job, but he's not a number one guy.
No, and you know, you're talking running, and it's a passing league, and they've got to get a pass rusher. I mean, we've been waiting for Melvin Ingram now for some
get
time.
Get a defensive tackle so the quarterback can't step up in the pocket.
Dominican Sue, Terrence Knighton, Darren Dockett, Nick Failey. I mean, they're all coming off the board. Vince Wilfork's still out there, probably going to sign with Houston. But I was surprised at that too. You don't let that guy have that release valve there to get out of the way, and maybe you do something. But Ingram has to step up. I mean, they've been waiting too long for that. Of course, they could have had Jason Pierre-Paul if they didn't draft Ryan Matthews up as high as they did.
Yeah, Ryan Matthews, when he was on the field, he was dynamite. The problem was he wasn't on the field enough.
Yeah, when I'm driving.
He's a good football player,
though,
I think.
Yeah, he is a good football. And I've heard quite a few remarks of him being Malinger or whatever. that guy gave everything he had, you know, and if you can't go, you can't go. And I certainly never heard the players saying that they thought he was soft or that he'd ask out or raise his hand. I mean, you want to talk about why they got to the playoffs 2 years ago. It was Ryan Matthews. He had more yards than any other rusher in the month of December when he went on that run. So, you know, he sacrificed his body that year. But let's circle back if we can real quickly, please. That was his reputation at Fresno State. He had nicks. He had bruises. He had, you know, he wasn't able to go all the time. So it's hard to blame him for bringing his skill set and his body of work into the NFL when it was exactly what happened at Fresno State.
But I also think in the NFL, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think you need to have two dynamite backs now, two guys that can rotate, because the pounding these guys take is unmerciful.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. You've been in enough locker rooms. You walk in there, it looks like you walked up on a car accident. You know, it's amazing the violence out there now and the speed and the size of these guys. One time you were big and you were slow, now you're big and fast, and the running back's going to attest to it.
Okay, last thing, Padre baseball.
Yeah, here we go.
Something to get excited about. Won today. They beat the Angels over Diablo Stadium 7-3. They out-hit them 12-10, so a good road win today. Tommy Medek, 2-for-3 day, a couple of runs scored. Yanherva Solarte, a couple of hits today. Jake Gobert, now he's not on the 40-man roster. He had a couple of hits today. And big Alex Dickerson, the kid out of Poway, a 1-for-3 day, a couple of walks. And he's a guy that may have pushed for a spot on this roster. But it's going to be an exciting year, I think, for all of us.
Oh, my goodness. I can't wait. That was dreadful last year sitting through some of those games. You know, that
just
was,
last year?
Yeah, well, I'm being kind here. So, but what I liked yesterday, I mean, there were two anchormen wearing Padre uniforms yesterday, a Will Ferrell, of course, but Jason Shields. I mean, that was awesome what he did.
They couldn't even hit the ball out of the infield.
They
off
could.
Him.
He was throwing darts. I mean, he was just spotting that thing, and he had his game face on and said, "Boys, this is how we do it." I mean, they're loaded that rotation, and good for Blackie that he can finally fill out a lineup card that he's not embarrassed to give the umpire.
I thought it was really cool, and you knew Tony really well.
Right.
I think it was really cool. Will Ferrell wore 19. For nine different teams yesterday, and when he came over to the Padre complex last night, he wore number 20 when he donned a Padre uni.
Yeah, he stayed classy. What'd you expect?
That's good stuff. Hey, you have a great weekend, my friend.
That's it. I got another half hour material here.
Well, I know. You're always supposed to over-prepare.
You
That's
got
my
it.
Middle name.
Thanks for having me, Boy Scout.
Hey, great having you. Jay Paris, always a pleasure to have Jay. For many years, Jay was a regular guest on my show, and he's now working here and doing a dynamic job at the Mighty 1090. We're going to get to the bottom of the hour. We'll get you an update. When we come back, we're going to continue to talk NFL free agency. Elliot Harrison from the NFL Network. He's an analyst and NFLnow.com. Next, after a Linda Welby update, right here on San Diego Sports Leader, the Mighty 1090.
This is the home of the Padres.
Oh, yonder. That ball's off the base of the wall to right center field, and here comes Matt Kemp right behind him. Jedrico, Carlos Quinton. Well, that went a long way.
San Diego Sports Leader, the Mighty 1090.
Like I said, this is running back's dream. You know, to be able to play an offense like this. So, you know, I didn't really have any second thoughts, you know, and I really wanted to come here and play for Coach Chip.
That was former Charger running back Ryan Matthews, excited about the opportunity to play with Chip Kelly there and the Philadelphia Eagles. Well, since we went to the bottom of the hour, the Chargers have just signed a veteran defensive back, a local kid out of Point Loma High School in Montana, Jimmy Wilson, a four-year veteran, started 21 of 60 games for the Dolphins. He has signed a two-year contract, no terms of that deal announced, but veteran cornerback Jimmy Wilson, a hometown product from Point Loma High School, has just signed a two-year deal with the San Diego Chargers. Well, we're going to head out once again to the Corky's Hotline. Very happy to welcome to the program Elliot Harrison from the NFL Network, outstanding analyst, also online at NFLnow.com. Elliot, welcome, and thanks for the time today. How are you?
I'm great, and I like the Jimmy Wilson signing myself. I think the Chargers need some bodies back there. You remember the Broncos playoff game 2 years ago that San Diego could have won. They're in Denver, and they're having all sorts of problems. I think getting a vet like that, who's not, you know, not a 10-year veteran, still got a lot of tread on the tires. You know, it's a low impact signing, but you combine it with Brandon Flowers, I like it.
Hey, what'd you think of the Orlando Franklin signing earlier this week, the former Denver offensive lineman?
You know, that's an interesting one. I tell you, I had a pretty good disagreement with some of my colleagues about what the Chargers' biggest need was, and everyone convinced me that it had to be the offensive line, and looking at the Chargers' line specifically, you know, it's easy to point the finger to that, and I tell you, obviously Franklin's not a center. But you look at how many different offensive line formations Phillip Rivers had to play with last year. Didn't Phillip Rivers have five centers?
Correct.
Start at one time? I mean, can you imagine as a quarterback, you know, Rivers is up there. He's calling the offense from the line, and he's relying so much on his protection. And you just can't have different guys and mediocre guys starting in front of you all the time. I hope that is a position that San Diego hits in the draft hardcore, and I'm talking about early rounds.
You know, the thing that I've been saying, Elliot, for a long period of time, they need to beef up that defensive line, namely the nose tackle or defensive tackle position. They haven't had a dominating player at that position since Jamal Williams, and that's been a number of years now.
I thought you were going to say Louis Kelcher and Gary Big Hand Johnson, but I guess I was going back too far. I just mentioned that we had a disagreement about what the Chargers' biggest need was. I wanted them to beef up the front seven. That's exactly what I wanted. And, I reneged on that, but let me tell you, if they went out and they got a nose tackle early on, I would be all for it. The thing is, you know, nose tackle is really underrated. It is hard to find a guy like Jamal Williams. Those guys aren't growing on trees. You know, guys like Casey Hampton that used to play in Pittsburgh or Vince Wilfork, they're not just out there, you know, shopping at the Nike store. You just walk up and sign them. There are very few nose tackles that can impact a game. We saw a defensive tackle sign that could impact a game, Nick Fairley. He went down in St. Louis, But I agree with you wholeheartedly. I'd love to see San Diego go there as well in the draft.
You know, I was a little disappointed last night. I was on the air. And Terrence Knighton signed with the Washington Redskins, a one-year deal for $4 million. I thought he might have been a nice fit in San Diego.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Some guys can play in a 4-3 and a 3-4, but sometimes we get a little too caught up in that. I think Terrence Knighton could do both. But teams are mixing up their fronts so much now that it's hard to really marry a guy to a position. But you know, one of the words about Knighton was that he wasn't in shape. You know, I didn't see it myself, but I can tell you he gave Denver a few good years, and that's kind of addition by subtraction. If you get a guy like Terrence Knighton, not only are you making your own front better, but that's your rival in your division that you're weakening.
We're visiting with Elliot Harrison on the Corky's Hotline. Elliot does an outstanding job with NFL Network as an analyst. He also has a program on the internet, NFLnow.com. Hey, where are you at right now with big Vince Wilfork? I know he's visiting Houston, probably going to sign in Houston. I haven't gotten the final word yet, but where do you think he's at in his career? He got another year, maybe two left?
I'm surprised he's not retiring. And I don't mean that as disrespect to Vince Wilfork, but it's just more that when you're 33 or 34 years old, how much more do you want to be playing on the nose? You know, you just won a Super Bowl. It's a great time to walk away, in my opinion. So do you really want to start over with a new team? I mean, isn't it kind of a shame in the salary cap era that we're in that guys like him can't just play their whole career with one team? I mean, wouldn't you hate to see Phillip Rivers in the day with somebody else? I really thought Wilfork was going to walk away. I hate to say you want to see a guy retire. Obviously, you want to see a guy be able to do what he wants to do, but I wish there were more guys that played one, you know, their whole career. Wilfork's had a great career. He can hang it up right now and be at least a candidate for the Hall of Fame. I'm not saying he's a Hall of Famer, but at least be a candidate.
I think he probably will be a Hall of Famer with what he's been able to get done there in New England. I mean, and let's face it, I think that New England defense this year was one of the best defenses they probably had since about 2004.
Yeah, I agree. Well, that's right when Wilfork came in. But, you know, Darrelle Revis was a huge, huge part of that. And I understand why they let him sign with the Jets. You don't want to commit that kind of money. He was a mercenary for them this year. It worked out. It reminded me a lot of what the 49ers did 20 years ago with Deion Sanders signing for 1 year and then ended up going to Dallas. You know, Wilfork's been a great player. And New England had a good defense this year. But I think next year they're going to have to do it a lot more on scheme and mixing up coverages because they're not going to have two major impact players. And Wilfork's been a leader for that team, you know, a locker room guy. those are always hard to replace.
Dallas today signs the free agent from the Raiders, Darren McFadden, after losing DeMarco Murray yesterday. And I would certainly think with that great offensive line in Dallas, and they're awful good, if McFadden's ever going to do anything really of substance in his NFL career, it's probably going to be behind this offensive line.
I agree with you totally. You know, hey, Jerry Jones got his razor back. I joke that Felix Jones and Matt Jones are still out there. I guess Peyton Hillis is too. But, you know, Darren McFadden, I was just saying this, you know, that he and Adrian Peterson came in the league at the same time. And he's got a lot less mileage because he's been hurt than Adrian Peterson does when you look at the carries. So if McFadden can stay healthy, it's a low-risk deal. You got to like it. Now, I was kind of hoping Dallas would at least give Stephen Ridley a look. But, you know, I'm fine with McFadden signing. If you miss, it's really no harm, no foul. This isn't the kind of deal where they committed a ton of money. So I think it was a good swing.
There for a while, Chip Kelly was public enemy number one in Philadelphia after letting LeSean McCoy go in a trade to Buffalo. Now everybody's patting him on the back.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't wear their arms out patting him on the back too much, you know, because let's see if these guys play a full slate of games. You know, we need to see if Sam Bradford can. And I hate to call a guy injury prone. I think it's just been bad luck for Sam Bradford. But still, you've got some guys. I mean, I don't need to tell you about Ryan Matthews. I mean, they're in San Diego. I mean, trying to get him to play a full slate of games would be nice. Every guy they got, I mean, between Murray, between Alonzo, between Bradford, they've all had injury problems in the past. And then they've been trying to, you know, they were trying to move Evan Mathis, who's been one of their best players. So I'm a little hesitant on them. And let's not forget that Jeremy Maclin just signed in Kansas City. Who's going to be catching the football in Philadelphia? They got Jordan Matthews, pretty good rookie last year, but I don't think he's ready to be a number one. Riley Cooper I don't think scares anybody. So I guess Zach Ertz, their tight end, is going to have to be the big dog there. But I'm a little concerned for that offense.
What did you think about the signing of Ndamukong Suh with the Miami Dolphins, the number of years and the money and guaranteed money?
I thought it was too much. You know, I don't believe in investing that kind of money in that position. It doesn't mean that he's not worth it. Doesn't mean that he won't help them a great deal. But I just hate having that much of your salary invested or your future funds invested in that position. Now, if Miami can impose its will, you know, in games, then it was worth it. I mean, you mentioned Dallas. Great example. I mean, Dallas showed the thing that we've all seen for the entire time we've been watching football, that if you dominate up front, you can win any game, irrespective of who else you have on the team. And I think that's what Miami's trying to do with the defensive line. The thing is what Dallas had last year is they had a quarterback that made big-time plays and led the league in passing. Miami needs Ryan Tannehill to make that next step. You know, right now Ryan Tannehill is a middle-of-the-road quarterback, and I know you're asking me about Sue, but it can't all be about Sue. I mean, Tannehill at some point needs to live up to the billing or at least take another step forward. He's pretty decent right now, but he's got to get really good.
We're visiting with Elliot Harrison from the NFL Network here on the Corky's Hotline. You know, I look at the Raiders. They're trying hard. I know they were devastated. They wanted to really throw a lot of money at DeMarco Murray, but DeMarco Murray was set on taking that plane flight down to Philadelphia and eventually, you know, decided to sign there. The Raiders still got a ton of money they'd like to spend.
Well, you're just as bad with your geography as I am, man. Taking the plane down to Philadelphia. You guys say things like that all the time. I get called on it. Yeah, you know, the Raiders are interesting. You thought that they might make a move towards Murray or maybe even Julius Thomas, some of these other guys. Here's the thing about Oakland. Per the agreement, the players and the owners, teams have to spend a minimum amount of money every 4 years, and Oakland is way behind. Oakland literally has to spend money. They have to, and it's not really happened yet to the degree that people want it to, and you just keep kind of waiting, like, when are they going to sign that big guy? If you look at most of their signings, it's a bunch of players that you just can't get that excited about. At some point, the Raiders are going to have to overpay somebody. That's just the long and the short of it. They're going to have to overpay somebody because they've got to spend the money, but right now, who's out there? Who's out there? There's not really any big names out there. You know, Nick Fairley was one of the last big names out there. And, you know, obviously he went to St. Louis, but I feel for the Raider fans. I really do. I feel for the Raider fans.
Hey, Elliot, last question. You know, I brought this up yesterday on the talk show, and we saw a lot of really good football players announce their retirement this week. I mean, Jake Locker hung it up. Jason Worlds, the linebacker from the Steelers, hangs it up at 27. Patrick Cortland Willis Finnegan. Coming off toe surgery. He hangs it up, and even Cortland Finnegan hung it up this week.
So are you asking me to prognosticate who's next?
No, not, but I think this is going to become a little bit more of a trend. These guys are making so much money earlier in their career, and they want to be able to walk away and be able to enjoy it, I think.
I agree, and I don't have any problem with it at all. I applaud the decision. Different reasons for all those guys, but, you know, Jake Locker to me is the one that was the most interesting. I don't blame him. You know, you're 26 going on 27. You've been beat up, you know. You've been beat up. You've made a nice amount of money. If you've got a house and you put some of that money away and you think there's other things you can do with your life and you want to be happy, why not? Why not? Because, you know, really, the only people that are concerned with legacy are the fans. You know, when people all bashed Michael Jordan for playing with the Wizards about his legacy, if somebody wants to play, I say let him play. Let Emmett go play with the Cardinals if that's what he wants to do. You know, so to speak. And if a guy wants to hang it up, then that's his right. And I applaud Jake Locker's decision and Jason Worlds and Cortland Finnegan. Listen, the game beats you up, and to have your health is it's hard to put a price tag on having your health going forward.
Yeah, especially when you see some of these old veteran football players come by training camp and walk through the locker room from time to time, and they can't walk a straight line at 45 or 50 years old.
Yeah, yeah, it's tough to see, but, you know, that's – it's part of the game. That's part of all sports. But, you know, at the same time, the NFL has been great for a lot of these players as well. I think just for a guy like Jake Locker, he said it, his heart wasn't in it. And if your heart's not in it, you just can't get beat up. You don't want to get beat up like that anymore, not if you don't have passion for what you're doing.
Hey, Elliot, thanks so much for the time. Really respect your work on the air, and thanks for coming on today.
No worries. No worries. Take care.
All right. There you go. Elliot Harrison joining us on the Corky's Hotline, NFL Network analyst, and also online at NFLnow.com. We'll take a quick time out. We'll come back. We'll try to duck in a phone call or two before the top of the hour. Top of the hour, we're going to be joined by Scott Miller, national baseball writer for Bleacher Report. Coach John Quintero, this is San Diego Sports Leader. Thanks for tuning in to the Mighty 1090.
The Mighty 1090 Hotline is presented by Corky's.
Call 1-800-901-1102. Corky's.
Thanks again to Elliot Harrison joining us on the Corky's Hotline from the NFL Network. Fine analyst and does a really, really solid job. Okay, if you missed it, Jimmy Wilson signs with the Chargers, gets a two-year deal. Again, still waiting on the terms. Now, Wilson was drafted in the seventh round by the Miami Dolphins in 2011. Jimmy's 5'11", 205, played his high school football at Point Loma High School, played at the University of Montana. He started 21 of 60 games for the Dolphins. This is a good sign. This guy's can play on special teams, a dynamic football player, and this is a good sign. This is going to definitely help the Chargers secondary. So not only is he a local kid, he's a guy that's going to be able to come in here and play a little bit. I think it's interesting. When you talk to these network analysts, they're always a little bit kind of scratching their head regarding what the San Diego Chargers are doing or not doing. And again, I thought it was interesting his comment about Vince Wilfork. He thinks Wilfork ought to shut it down, but it sounds like Wilfork's going to get some kind of deal with the Houston Texans. Houston Texans, not a bad football team. But I hadn't heard Wilfork rumored to make a lot of trips. And obviously not coming to San Diego. We know that. We need to get to the top of the hour. Linda Welby's going to get us an update. Then we're going to come back. And we're going to be joined by Scott Miller, national baseball writer for Bleacher Report. And then the rest of the show, up until 6 o'clock, we'll take your phone calls. Coach John Quintero, going to 6. This is San Diego Sports Leader. Thanks for joining me on a Friday afternoon on the Mighty 1090.